Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Karen.
And I'm Paul. We know that stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the world of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
We know recurrent urinary tract infections cause much concern for people who perform intermittent self-catheterization. Research carried out by Coloplast shows that more than 40% of ISC users say that getting a UTI is a daily concern for them. We also know that people performing ISC get on average 2.7 UTIs a year, so that is a concern well placed. In this episode, we'll be exploring the impact of recurrent UTIs and how we can approach this challenge clinically to treat and prevent this common problem. I'm pleased to be joined by Sarah Hillary. Sarah is the lead nurse for urology and a urology advanced nurse practitioner at York and Scarborough Teaching Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Sarah is also a council trustee for the British Association of Urological Nurses. Welcome, Sarah. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Karen. Thanks. It's lovely to be part of my first podcast, so thanks for inviting me.
So, Sarah, I'm sure in your practice you see lots of people with recurrent UTIs, particularly when they are doing ISC. Do you see this as a real challenge to your clinical practice?
Very much so. The issue of recurrent urinary tract infections can be a make or break situation for patients beginning their ISC journey. And when you're first explaining to patients about the importance of performing self-catheterization, particularly for those patients who don't feel their bladder residuals are currently a problem, having to explain to them that urinary tract infections may be part of the whole ISC process is very difficult to get the patient to buy into. So we know the importance of ISC, and we know the clinical importance to protect the upper tracts for those patients who've got high post-void residuals, but also those patients with a moderate post-void residual who are getting those recurrent UTIs. It's really difficult to say to that patient, yes, you know, we want you to keep performing this. In the long term, it's really going to be helpful for you, but unfortunately, recurrent UTIs do tend to come hand in hand with the ISC process.
I'm really interested that you describe it as a make or break situation, and that just sort of, to me, signifies how impactful it is on people. That, you know, we know, for example, people with neurological conditions, a UTI can cause further neurological deterioration for them. So from your experience, what impact do you see that has on people and their individual well-being if they do have a number of UTIs?
For many people, starting ISC is a really big ask in the first place, to say that, you know, we're asking them to regularly put plastic tubes somewhere really intimate, really personal, really sensitive. Then when we add on that extra layer of the risk of UTIs, it can mean to people that, you know, I don't really want to be doing this. And then that becomes a significant barrier to them managing their bladder residuals in the future. So in that sense, it can be make or break. Because for somebody that's experiencing recurrent remitting UTIs, it really means that they're encountering medical problems that weren't there before they started performing ISC. It is a significant problem, and it's incumbent on us to try and do everything we can to try and mitigate those risks.
And I suppose it's, if you've got someone who's already having UTIs before starting ISC, you've kind of got that in your toolbox as a negotiation with them. But like you say, if someone's not having UTIs before starting ISC, is that negotiation even harder with that group of patients?
Exactly. And for many people, if we think about a man with long-term chronic retention in a moderate amount, we're asking him to do ISC, whereas before that, all he knew is that he was going to the toilet regularly to pass urine. We knew he was retaining larger amounts, but he wasn't. And then we ask him to perform ISC, and then he's getting infections. So then essentially, we've given him a problem rather than, you know, from his point of view, that he's experiencing relief from a problem.
I suppose it's that sense of misconceptions around ISC, and many people blame ISC for UTIs. For you, is it an important part of your education with people when they're learning, and then also as part of their follow-up about what's normal in terms of UTIs, you know, how they can prevent them? Do you include that as part of your teaching with people to address those misconceptions?
Absolutely, yes. Because, you know, as we all know, if we don't manage post-void residuals adequately, that's a high risk of UTIs in its own right. So it's important to get the patients to a place where they can understand that it's a payoff, really. And there's so much we can do to help prevent UTIs. Really, a lot of it is about giving the patients a chance to believe that they can master this and it can work really well for them, and that they can have some control over the risk factors for UTIs as well. IC works so well for many people. I know I've told you this before, Karen, but I've tried it myself, and I can't advocate anybody else to try it on themselves as a nurse. But the reason I did it was because I wanted to be able to look our patients in the eye and say, it really wasn't that bad to perform. I can then offer techniques on how I did it. And I can also empathise with the emotions I went through. And as a health practitioner, my fear of UTIs obviously was really key, because I know the concomitant risks of ISC. So it's an important thing to help empower people to understand they do have a degree of control over of their risk factors for UTIs.
From what I've been reading, it said that sort of the two key things to prevent UTIs for people with ISC is the frequency that they catheterize, and making sure that their routine is correct and they're not overfilling in between catheterizations. So I think that just shows that routine is important. I'm wondering, how do you keep that momentum going with people long term to keep them concordant with the routine that you've recommended to them? Because often it's easy to relax and not catheterize as much as you should do. Do you do anything in particular to help on a long term basis?
What I find really helps is to find the key factors for any individual person, which will allow the management of ISC to fit in really well in their life in a way that it's not going to cause significant problems, you know, like socially or in the workplace. And that allows the routine to be built in naturally. But also, it's really important to instill in our patients that that routine is so important, because as soon as you start introducing other factors, then the risk start to increase. You know, if you start to leave a gap when perhaps you should be doing ISC, or you're not allowing your bladder to drain effectively enough, then that's when the problems start to arise. And it's so easy to do. We all know that when something's working well, the temptation is to just kind of, you know, not focus on it quite so much. So again, it's on us to encourage our patients to stick with their routines really effectively to get the best out of ISC. Because let's face it, when we get a urinary tract infection, it can be really miserable and infect every part of our life. So it's really important to keep that rhythm and that routine to improve concordance.
And I think, is it a case of taking people back to remind them about what they have gained as a result of ISC? I've used this example before, but I have a friend who reached a stage where she couldn't walk her dog without having to stop and have a wee in the bushes halfway round on the dog walk. And then as soon as she started catheterizing, she didn't have to have a wee on her dog walk anymore. And that was the key thing for her that made a massive difference to her life, you know, and that was her winning factor, that you have to come back and remember, why am I doing this in the first place?
Yeah. And for that, when you do have a situation like that, it really does help illustrate for the person the benefits as well as the risks of ISC. You know, if there is a benefit that allows you certain freedom, I have certain patients who particularly struggle with their sleep because of high post-void residuals. And a point that I've got across to them is, you know, if you're able to perform this last thing at night, your bladder's nice and empty, you've got a head start to have a good night's sleep. Similarly, I have a friend who had to perform self-catheterization. He's a bass player in a band, and at first it was a huge cognitive shift to ask him to start performing ISC. But it enabled him to get through his set without worrying about his bladder, without worrying about the other things that come along with where am I going to find a toilet, etc. If you can find those individual things for each patient, it can really help. We also encounter patients, you know, anybody can perform ISC who might need to. We have patients on building sites where it can be hard to find conditions to wash your hands or dispose of catheters correctly. So product choice can be really helpful in allowing concordance and in so doing, reducing the risk of UTIs.
So in your clinical experience, how do you approach a patient who comes to you with recurrent UTIs? Do you use a framework or a troubleshooting guide? Say you have someone come to you for the first time, how would you start to approach that individual?
Well, generally, when people have high post-void residuals who are going to require to do ISC, they've normally had a few urine infections anyway, and that can be one of the reasons why the residuals have been highlighted. So when inevitably they then start to worry about what could be causing them or what they can do to help improve things, it's really important to break down their actual individual routine to make sure that they're sticking to it regularly and that it's serving their needs. I think it's important to make sure that any individual patient has regular post-void residual volumes assessed to make sure that they're getting the right amount of ISC throughout their day. I also make sure that they're emptying their bladder effectively with each ISC. Again, there is a temptation once you start performing it regularly and it's easier for you, you put the catheter in, you drain, and then you take it out again. But it's really taking the time to make sure the bladder is fully empty. So that, again, is a really important part. And then also hydration is really key to helping reduce UTIs as well. And many patients, we all know this, will reduce what they're drinking because they're frightened to build up what's remaining in their bladder, or it might make them fear that they're going to need the loo more often. So sticking to 1,200 to 2 litres of fluid daily, again, is really important. So thinking of a framework, I tend to focus on those main issues. Of course, looking at hygiene as well and technique, but they're the general major themes that you can pick out to help a patient create a routine for them that's going to optimize their management of their bladder and fit in well with their lives.
So starting with those almost conservative measures to start with, do you do a review period with people? And then if there is not enough improvement or no improvement, do you then tend to delve a bit deeper? And I'm thinking particularly of people, say someone's been catheterizing for some time, they're confident in their technique, but they then start to experience UTIs. Would you approach that person?
I think once we'd checked that their technique and their routine was working well, it's important to look at the individual infections themselves, because, you know, there are those infective organisms which can build up resistances to common antibiotics. So for those kinds of patients, I'd be looking at their culture and sensitivity from their urine cultures and having a look at whether there was a resistance profile developing. In that sort of situation, you know, it is important to make sure that that organism is effectively knocked out. And although we have the 3-day empirical treatment for uncomplicated UTIs, for patients who perform ISC and have resistant organisms in their urine, they're really going to need a more substantial treatment of an appropriate antibiotic for which the organism is sensitive to. So I'd give them a week's worth or perhaps 2 weeks' worth after liaising with our microbiologist.
I know in the past, many patients saw long-term antibiotics as the answer to all their problems. And the advice that we get about the use of antibiotics naturally changes very frequently, you know, down to the length of courses, the appropriateness of long-term, down to even the actual antibiotics themselves that are prescribed. Do our patients need more education on antibiotics about whether they are the answer to all their problems?
I think they do, because when we explain to patients that the antibiotics that they're exposed to can over time perhaps worsen the situation for them and other individuals in society when we develop, you know, a societal resistance to an antibiotic, people are really keen to help reduce that risk in the future. However, as clinicians, it's really hard to have that discussion with a patient to say, well, you know, you may feel that you need an antibiotic, but it isn't really the solution at the moment, particularly if it means that they're going to need to change something in their lifestyle rather than take a pill. But there are other things that, you know, particularly postmenopausal women can do, such as topical estrogen therapy can be very helpful in mitigating the risk of UTIs, because it can help build up that natural resistance to infections themselves.
Are topical estrogens something that tend to get forgotten in the grand scheme of things?
I think sometimes. I think particularly with neuropathic patients, you know, we might be focused on the neuropathic element of their presentation, when in fact, if we can add in that estrogen therapy, it might just tip the balance to reduce the incidence of infection.
Now you've brought up neuropathic patients. Thank you very much. That's a beautiful link into our my next question. If you've got someone with a neurogenic bladder who's doing ISC, I'm thinking particularly around people with MS, because we know UTIs for that patient group can increase the deterioration in their MS symptoms, and they have a much higher risk and it causes more concern. Do you take additional steps with that patient group to enable them to prevent UTIs?
Yes, I do. And I have a particular patient who, heartbreakingly, she was lost to COVID recently. I was very, very sad to hear about that. She was a lady with MS and she'd been performing ISC for a number of years. And because of the repeated urinary tract infections, again, she'd been prescribed lots and lots of antibiotics, which unfortunately over time she'd become resistant to. So when she would develop a nasty infection, it became increasingly difficult to find something that would appropriately treat her. We did find the right antibiotic, again, after liaising with the microbiologist. But also we gave her some intravesical treatments to help recoat the bladder lining, which we were hoping might tip the balance in her favour of reducing further infections. And it did seem to help for some time. So there is always that as well. There are proprietary products in which are made with sodium hyaluronate, hyaluronic acid, and there are other products as well which contain extra products such as chondroitin sulfate. I think there's all sorts of intravesical treatments you can use.
So with treating patients with recurrent UTIs, are there any key lessons that you've learned that you would like to share with other people that would help them when they're seeing people in clinic?
Hydration is key. It's a funny thing, but I love my water. I think lots of people of my generation do, but I think the older generation aren't as keen of drinking water. They love their tea, fair enough. But having that volume of fluid intake can make such a difference, and particularly in avoiding constipation, because constipation is another key factor for developing UTIs. Constipation, again, impairs voiding. So helping patients to manage their constipation, or even getting them to identify that they are experiencing constipation in the first place, is really, really important. Often I'll see a patient in clinic and I'll ask about their bowel function. And again, with neuropaths, bowel function is often impaired. And I'll ask about how frequently they go to the toilet to empty their bowels. When they explain to me that they perhaps don't go for several days and they have to push, but they don't feel they're constipated, it's again another big ask to get them to take something regularly to keep their bowel more emptied. But having the extra water helps with that too.
And do you have any advice that you would share with people listening?
Regarding UTIs, they're awful. They can really, really affect all elements of your life and really get in the way. But if they're identified quickly and managed well, and we can do as much as we can to try and prevent them, it shouldn't be an impediment to starting ISC or continuing it effectively. Advising our patients how to perform self-catheterization regularly, safely, effectively, is doing everything we can to help them avoid UTIs. We know that they're not avoidable in their entirety, but if we also arm our patients with very simple ways of helping to avoid them, in addition to helping them to go away once they arrive, we're also helping patients to manage their bladders effectively overall. So I would really advise colleagues, clinicians teaching people self-catheterization, to, yes, warn them of the risks as well as the benefits of ISC, but to really stress the long-term benefits of emptying the bladder effectively with an in-and-out catheter rather than an indwelling catheter, because, you know, at the end of the day, that is the alternative to ISC if we're unable to empty our bladders effectively. And we all know that bacterial colonization happens within 24 hours with an indwelling catheter, and the risks of urinary tract infections are much, much higher, in addition to urethral trauma, bladder stones, and even bladder cancer from an indwelling catheter. So we've got to keep that in proportion, really, and really keep that in mind.
So, Sarah, as a final point, you are a council member of the British Association of Urological Nurses. Do you want to give us a quick plug for them to tell us a bit more about that role?
Of course. So the British Association of Urological Nurses is a national organisation for healthcare professionals with an interest in urology. You can join even if you're not a nurse as an associate member, and you'll have access to all our education resources, networking and professional development opportunities. So you can find our website quite easily. It's done an awful lot for me, my career, and it's great to have the good support of other urological nurses all over the country just to share ideas and moral support. So, yeah, come and join us.
Bowna, a great organisation. We know working in specialist nursing, it's often quite an isolating role. So having professional organisations like that, it's really good to have that networking and stay in touch with each other to support each other with clinical issues as well. So Sarah, that's the end of our time today. Thank you so much for joining me. I've had a really interesting discussion with you, and it's been great to chat about recurrent UTIs and the impact that it can have on patients, and also how you address that with your patients in clinic. So it's been really interesting. If you would like more information on the things that Sarah and I have discussed today, you can find more information on our website, and that's coloplastprofessional.co.uk. Thank you very much, Sarah, and I hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, Karen. I've really enjoyed it.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.